are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
4 seconds left. He's got the ball. He should have it. Isaiah hangs on the ball, flips it up to the Raptors. Detroit is the city of champions again.
Detroit basketball.
What's happening? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Tuesday, January the 7th. And is Blake Griffin done for the season? This is your boy Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, the sports writer here in Detroit City covering the NBA for the Detroit News and Associated Press, the Pistons fan and follower my whole life just like you guys, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thanks for spreading the word about the Locked On Pistons podcast. I know that was the number one topic of conversation with the families over the holidays, and we appreciate you guys and that talk continuing into 2020. Today we're going to talk about the latest Pistons news from Monday. One of those good news, bad news things, depending on how you're looking at the rest of the season and beyond. Also, we're going to talk to Chris Manning from the Locked On Cavs podcast. Chris is a friend of the show, talking about the Pistons and Cavs home and home series coming up this week with the lowly Cavaliers and the lowly Pistons. And we're also going to pass along my parameters of how I'll grade the Pistons' trade deadline performance. Been thinking a lot about this over these last few days, as you can imagine. But February 6th, fast approaching. We are now under a month before the trade deadline, and lots of interesting angles that we'll cover here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. But give me a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore for that. Also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. And check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons Dash. Matt Shook with the Pistons back in action tonight in Cleveland, the last of a six-game roadie that they are 1-4 so far this season. But the big news was off the court, as on Monday, Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports reporting that Blake Griffin would be visiting a knee specialist this week in Los Angeles, and that season-ending knee surgery is a consideration. Not super difficult to understand or not super surprising to hear this news about Blake Griffin's left knee. I have thoughts and have talked to some other medical people that feel like he has an arthritic knee that's just not going to really ever get a lot better. He had the surgery this past offseason, and it's never really fully healed. This entire season, he hasn't looked like himself. We know that. And Reggie Jackson has only played two games as well. And Rod Beard of the Detroit News passes along that he asked if the Pistons could look at getting disabled player exceptions for both Griffin and Jackson. And he went on Twitter to explain that he was told that they wouldn't get the cap space to operate with, so they'd have to go over the tax line to get other players, which is certainly something that the Pistons don't want to do. But disabled player exceptions could get roster spots open, and if they are to make trades of other players and open up that prorated cap room for some of the players that are traded, if they're able to get less money for certain players that might be on the move out of town, like the Andre Drummonds or Langston Galloways, or maybe even Derrick Rose's of the world, then maybe you could move the two-way guys over to the regular roster in Lewis King or Jordan Bone's case. Or you might be able to sign guys on vet minimum deals prorated for the rest of the year. So those could be options for the Pistons going forward. Of course, the biggest thing is that the Pistons have the young players that are going to be getting some run, getting some burn the rest of the way. And, yeah, if Blake Griffin is deemed to be out for the year and Andre Drummond is traded, which I believe is going to happen before the trade deadline, then, yeah, the dreams of the postseason are virtually over. Certainly not completely over, as the Orlando Magic dealing with injuries of their own, and the Charlotte Hornets and Chicago Bulls not being juggernauts that couldn't possibly be overtaken or anything like that. But Blake Griffin's knee, if you're a Pistons fan looking for a bright side of this, obviously that gets more playing time for Sekou Doumbouya and other players in the front court like Christian Wood, and you'd be in a much low-pressure situation, as you certainly wouldn't be fighting for the playoffs. And, of course, Blake Griffin is a very important player for the Pistons franchise. That kind of goes without saying, but it's important at some point that he's able to be productive as a player. You don't want to be given $78 million or I think $76 million over these next 2 years to a player who's not helping you win games on the basketball court or at least be a leader in the locker room. I mean, we've seen Reggie Jackson admirably play the role of leader on the bench, cheerleader, all that kind of stuff. So good for Reggie. And certainly Blake would probably fit the bill as that type of player going forward as well. But having him on the court, and even down the road, if the rebuild goes well, having him as a possible trade chip that could be moved for other young assets or anything else to clear the cap room for him, possibly even in the summer of 2021. Again, I don't buy the fact that Blake Griffin is definitely done, and we'll see as time will tell. I mean, when the Pistons traded for him, he looked pretty rough at times, even in that first season with the Pistons coming off of injuries, and we saw what a healthy offseason did for him going into last season. Certainly that was not the case, having knee surgery this past year, and we've seen him be a shell of himself. So if they want to start the clock on the rehab, start the clock on his offseason as early as possible, certainly we'd be all for that here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. Another thing we're interested in you guys doing is checking out Twitter, Locked On NBA Net. It's a collection of all the hosts on one Twitter feed. Really cool during the day to catch up on all the news and during a full slate of games, and also on Instagram. Check it out, the handle Locked On NBA Net, highlighting the biggest stories of the NBA. Up next, we're going to talk to Chris Manning of Locked On Cavs to get familiar with the opponent. Cleveland Cavaliers talk John Beilein, Kevin Love as well. And later on, I'm going to tell you what the Pistons, my parameters for a successful month for the Pistons are, according to the players that should be and I believe are and could be on the block. That's coming up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast.
Yes, sir!
All right, and now we're being joined by Chris Manning, the host of Locked On Cavs. Find him on Twitter at CWM Writes with a W-R-I-T-E-S. Chris, thanks for taking the time to join us here.
Hey, man, as always, glad to do. Glad we're, I feel like we're kismet in terms of our just like weird basketball team. So it's good to chat.
Yeah, except you guys had LeBron James and won a championship fairly recently. So maybe not quite, but yeah, we're in the distance.
One title each.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm old enough to remember more Pistons titles, but that's just me. But Chris, like you said, we just talked on your show that's going to be running at Locked On Cavs, so check that out. He asked me a little about the Pistons if you want to check out that work. But as we talked about on your show, finally some interesting things going on with these teams over the last few years or few weeks. Kevin Love has gone viral. I guess we got to start there with the Cleveland Cavaliers. What is going on with Kevin Love? What's the up to the minute as we tape this late on Monday night situation with him? And what do you expect to kind of be happening here over these next few weeks?
I think the Kevin Love Cavs relationship is at its end. Anyone can go read the stuff in The Athletic. I think Kevin, I can't quite figure out like what some of the dividing lines are here. I think Kevin's like a very smart guy, a very thoughtful guy. And I can't imagine he didn't consider when he signed that contract that he didn't think that this was a possibility. And I think especially when he got hurt, that was like a thing where like when he got hurt in the season last year, basically went down the tube, like trading George Hill, trading Kyle Korver, punting to trying to keep your draft pick, I think was the move. And I think for the Cavs, that was the logical long-term healthy thing. I just can't imagine that Kevin didn't consider that as a possibility. I empathize with him because I do also understand like he would want to win. I do think the Cavs, I don't know. They did push that a lot last year that they were going to try and compete. Obviously it didn't happen. I think it was always kind of foolhardy to expect that. But I think it's at the end here. I don't know like when this gets done. I don't know, you know, when he's going to get traded or where or for how much. I don't think it's going to be a huge, huge offer, but I think we're at the end here. I've been wondering the last couple of days, and I don't know if you have like a take on this, but I wonder if the Cavs would have just in Love, they both would have just been better off not doing the extension at all. If Love should have done a 1-1, just something that would have offered them kind of more flexibility for both of them to just kind of let it go when they wanted to. That obviously didn't happen. They're in the situation now, but I think it's better for everybody if Kevin Love is just sent somewhere else. And it's a crappy way for that to end, but I think it's the only logical scenario here.
Yeah, I got to say, when he signed the extension, it was a surprise to me because it came at a time when it seemed to be pretty obvious that the Cavs were going to be going into a little bit of a tailspin. And that's okay in the NBA to be really good for a little while and then be pretty bad for a little while and try to get the assets and do the full rebuild. So I was surprised that Kevin Love would see the Cleveland situation and maybe see a way to get back to the playoffs in the short term. And, of course, it hasn't worked out even close to that way so far with the Cavaliers. But Chris Manning of Locked On Cavs joining us. Obviously, here in Michigan, we keep tabs with John Beilein. We saw the stories early on this season that players were complaining. Sources say that treating them like college kids, spending too much time on the fundamentals. And now we see this Kevin Love situation, which, I mean, there's got to be some small part of it that's John Beilein related or maybe even a bigger part of it. What's kind of the overall, far away look at what's going on with Kevin or with John Beilein and his relationship with his players. Is it really bad so far in this first season? Obviously, the record's not good. We expected the record to not be good, but is it real? Like, is there a lot? Is there some positives to take from what's been going on so far this year?
Well, I do. I think he's hurt now, but I think Kevin Porter Jr. has been excellent. You know, the pick they actually got from the Pistons, gave the Pistons a bunch of money.
A lot of Pistons fans are not happy about that he got traded.
KPJ, been very good. I think Garland's really come around. And here's the thing with Beilein. Number one, Beilein is, to say this delicately, he's good at being a professional, not telling exactly what's going on because he has no incentive to. Like, he's good at that. The Kevin Love thing, he's been like, yeah, everything's fine. I don't know what you guys are talking about when it's, like, very clearly been true. And to kind of link these two things together, I can think distinctly back to like being at the Cavs training facility and preseason and Kevin being like, you know, like it's cool to work on fundamentals, like, and saying all the right things. And like, he's getting paid a lot of money. I get that. Like, it's probably not the most like fun thing. Some of the stuff that has been picked about with him and like his terminology and stuff just feels like very stupid to me that like, that's what you're picking nits about, in terms of your issues with the coach. You know, you're also getting paid quite a bit of money to like do the work to some degree. Like, I don't think I'm pro player empowerment, but like there's a certain point where like you kind of just got to make the most of it. Like, that's like a thing you just sort of need to do. It feels like weird to like that we're having to say that, but I feel like that's just the case. But I like Beilein. I think, you know, I think he's a good fit with the young guys. I think, again, KPJ has been great. Some of the stuff has been a little bit up and down. I'm curious to see like how he and the coaching staff can kind of get Colin Sexton to maybe do some different stuff going forward. But I think Beilein's tests are kind of ongoing. I think there is going to, we'll see how, what the roster looks like. We'll see what, you know, when, if it gets swapped out and he gets a different form of a mercenary roster kind of brought in. But I think there's been some, it has been some positive with him as he's getting his graph and he's just going to have his first big road trip coming up here. So I think he's going to keep learning, but I think it's been more positive just in terms of, I think the young guys, he's got to be part of the reason why these young guys are doing so well.
Yeah. And I know we're biased up here in Michigan, but when we saw those stories come up, I think the prevailing opinion from people who were either Michigan fans or followed John Beilein's career, that if they were talking about him teaching too much, it's like, well, yeah, you know, you're a bad NBA team with young players that need to be taught some things.
Yeah.
So what, doesn't it make sense that he'd be kind of stripping it down and working on more fundamentals than maybe you might expect at an NBA practice and all that? So that was kind of the thought coming up from up here. But Chris Manning, I wanted to ask you one more thing. It raised an eyebrow on draft night. Not that I had any issue with Darius Garland as a player. Obviously, he comes off the injuries, a little bit of an unknown coming out of Vanderbilt. But given that the Cavs' most valuable young player was Colin Sexton, who came off of his rookie year, and then you have kind of a small volume shooting guard in Colin Sexton, and then you kind of draft as your second most valuable asset, young asset at that point, to be Darius Garland, I kind of scratched my head at that. You always take best player available, but in this situation, when two guys seem to need to have the ball in their hands to develop, am I wrong about that? Did that seem like a questionable move on their part on draft night? And how is that going in terms of the relationship between the two? And what is the long-term prognosis of the lead guard situation for Cleveland now?
Yeah, so I think it's interesting because I would look at what has happened and I would say, number one, the Colin Sexton like isn't going to be your lead kind of distributor guard. Like, he's kind of in that Jordan Clarkson scorer mold. So he doesn't pass. Like, one of the reasons that I can like empathize with Kevin Love and Kevin Love being annoyed is that Colin Sexton just misses open guys all the time in games. Like, he makes more passes than I think I have even given him credit for, but and the dude has the right work ethic. The guy has like the right mindset about improving and working his tail off to get better. But there is stuff with him that just hasn't quite worked in terms of his passing. And Garland, although he does miss guys sometimes because he's 19 years old, he makes more passes and is more willing to like look for the pass, look to set guys up for lobs and stuff than I think Sexton has been at any point in his career. Like, when I look back at that draft, I certainly think like my preference was to get a wing. You know, I don't, you know, DeAndre Hunter was off the board, but like Jared Culver to me just seemed like he would have made a lot of sense. The Cavs did fall in love with Garland. I don't think it's like the worst pick in the world considering you're so early on in this process. You know, Colin, I think, will eventually probably be a guy who's best served coming off the bench, kind of playing a secondary kind of creator role, leading some bench units and kind of being his best skill is just going to be his volume scoring. So that's probably the best way to use him. That's going to be a future question that I think will be hard. Maybe I don't know when you can, I don't know what the right time to like have that conversation is, but I think you can do some stuff with them. I'll be curious to see what they do around them. You know, I think it's telling that with the other two picks in that draft, they did get Windler, who we haven't seen yet. And then KPJ, who's been, I think maybe been the best rookie so far. So there's that. You have Jetty Osman. I think, you know, wings and I think center and kind of bigs that can protect the rim are going to remain high on their wish list. So, like, I don't love the fit. I think there certainly are clear limitations on them if you're going to keep starting them all the time. But I think eventually, my guess, my best guess right now, I'd say going into next year, Sexton is probably coming off the bench. Garland's your lead guard. And whether it's KPJ starting with Jetty or they kind of bring in a mercenary wing, like let's say they sign Andre Roberson to just come in and be the starting three for a season or something like that. I think that's kind of the best way to go forward. You know, because Sexton doesn't strike me as a Beeline guy exactly from what I understand about what Beeline kind of recruited in college, but I think there's a way you can make him work. And he definitely has an NBA skill, but the fit's not great. And I think Colin would be, once they can have a roster that is more fully formed, some of this stuff will sort itself out better than it's or not, because this is a roster with a lot of expiring contracts, unhappy veterans. There's just a lot of influx right now. And I don't think the pick was perfect. Culver would have made more sense just in terms of pure fit. And he's been pretty good for Minnesota, but there is a way it can work, but I think it's going to take us some time to really know, even if some of the early results are kind of, I think in my mind, pointing us in a certain direction about what the optimal way to kind of organize those guys will be.
Well, I've always been a Colin Sexton guy. I covered the McDonald's All-American game when he was there before his year at Alabama. And there was all sorts of great players in that group, Mo Bamba, DeAndre Ayton, P.J. Washington, Jaren Jackson Jr. But the two guys that I walked away from that game in that week after following those guys was Colin Sexton and Michael Porter Jr. And Michael Porter Jr. is making myself look smart in these last couple weeks as well for the Denver Nuggets, a guy that I was hoping the Pistons would be smart and find a way to get back into that first round and get him as he fell in that draft as well. Chris Manning, quick question.
Yeah, go ahead. I just want to say this about Sexton. Just saying, if you're a Pistons fan who has not watched him, I'm not even kidding. When you watch him in this game on the games Tuesday, Thursday, watch Kevin Love. And just watch like that, like just watch that as like a sub part of your game watching experience, and you'll be like, oh, I get it. It's just so there that you don't have to even look that hard.
Yeah, we've seen the viral clip too of Kevin Love coming to get the ball and swing it across the court at the end of the shot clock. But yeah, it sounds like the Kevin Love era in Cleveland has its days numbered. But real quick, last question: Tristan Thompson, what happens with him? Is he going to get dealt or a buyout, or what do you predict is going to happen with him in these next few weeks?
You know, I think I can't imagine there's like a logical trade fit for him just because he's making like $18 million. I think someone like John Henson's just more flippable. A buyout to me would like be something maybe he would want, but my guess with Tristan is he's been so good this year. You know, he'd be losing a lot, I think, if he did just kind of go and you don't have any way to replace. My guess is that he finishes out the year and then his Caps tenure does probably come to an end. And I think he probably goes somewhere where he maybe makes a little bit less money, but he contributes to a championship. I think he's been like the kind of what you would want out of a guy in this situation. But I do think that if my read on Tristan is right, that I do think this is maybe his last year with the Cavs in one way or another. And I think he's going to be trying to go play for a contender next summer. Maybe he comes back on like a big 1-year deal in a weird cap summer, but I can't imagine like he's going to be itching to like run through. I think he knows what he wants to play at the highest level, continue to do that. And I think, it's even though it'll suck and it'll kind of end the longest tenured Cav, I think his future is probably moving on next summer, but you know, maybe he does get traded. Maybe he does to get a buyout, but I would expect next summer is like the end of the Tristan era.
The remnants of the LeBron James era are still hanging around, and John Beeline's got a little bit of a project on his hands down in Cleveland, and we'll get a close look at it tonight in Cleveland, Thursday night back in Detroit for the Cavaliers rematch with the Pistons. Chris Manning of Locked On Cavs, Fear the Sword, Cleveland Magazine, Forbes Sports, everywhere you can read stuff about the NBA and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Chris Manning is doing it. Chris, thanks for taking the time to join us here today.
Hey, Matt, thank you.
All right, I don't want to do a lot of Monday morning quarterback on February 7th, the day after the trade deadline on the Locked On Pistons podcast, so I want to lay it out there, my expectations and how I'm going to be grading the Pistons move by move here on the Locked On Pistons podcast after the deadline. I went with my game plan for the draft, and I said that I would trade up for Sekou Doumbouya at 15. But then the Pistons stayed pat. They didn't have to get up an asset and got him anyways. So of course, I had to give this team an A. So similarly, by the way, I kind of killed it on the last draft so far. A lot of stories to be told with this draft class as rookies. But outside the players that you knew that they weren't getting, I had Sekou up really high. Remains to be seen how he will pan out, but looks good so far. I had Nickeil Alexander-Walker. I know he's not really getting it done so far, but I think that there, it still looks like there's a decent prospect there with some added size. Had a great summer league. He was the darling in Las Vegas for what it's worth. And then Brandon Clark was another guy who I was really high with too, an all-rookie team type of player with Memphis kind of in that notch below Ja Morant for the rookie of the year numbers there. So I wanted to similarly lay down some ground rules for the Pistons with the trade deadline approaching, starting with Langston Galloway. All you need is a second-round pick for him, preferably one that's from a bad team. It could even be in the future. You can kind of roll the dice and see, you know, it kind of preferably in some ways for the future to kind of get the war chest rounded up and take a chance on a team that could be bad, so that pick could be up pretty high. Obviously, that could mean getting the pick from the team that's actually originally from a bad team or something like that. If it's a heavily protected second, you know, you only get it if it's 50 or below, I'd almost say screw it and keep Langston Galloway and have him come off your books this summer instead. And another trade wrinkle when talking about all of these things, if you're trading Drummond and you have some salary room out there in the future, I would say the Pistons should feel free to not just go for expiring contracts, but also take on bad salary to help the trade return in terms of the assets. That's rebuild 101. We will take your crap contracts to boost up the good part of what the package is going to be. Maybe a better pick, or maybe another pick, or maybe a better young player since we're taking your bad contract off your hands. So teams that are trying to fill to free up space for the summer of 2021, they got a contract that's still going to take them past the summer of 2021. We'll take that. We don't believe that we're going to be a very good team for the next couple of years. So we'll take your dead money, your bad money, as long as that pick gets better. So that could be, that goes for the Langston contract, the Langston trade, a Derrick Rose trade, an Andre Drummond trade, anything like that. That's rebuild 101 and see if the Pistons can kind of be savvy and make creative moves when it comes out of that. As for Rose, I say don't trade Derrick Rose if all the other team is offering is a second round pick that's outside of the top eight or so of the second round. So certainly something that's 40 and above. I mean, 40 and below, you take 40 and above. We'd keep him. We'll see if we can trade him this summer or maybe even go into next year with him as a reliable, maybe even starting point guard. Kind of an interesting note, Philadelphia right now has the first and third picks of the second round as it stands right now. The lottery doesn't count for the second round. So whoever is the last place team is going to get the first pick of the second round regardless of what happens in the lottery. So Atlanta and New York, a couple teams that you figure will be up near the top of the draft board regardless of what happens, you know, albeit ironically on Andre Drummond could mess up, Andre Drummond trade could mess up that a little bit for Philly's pick that is the Atlanta pick. So since Philly has the Atlanta and New York second round picks, maybe you can get one of those for Derrick Rose in a package. Sure, you might do that. But if you're talking about a mid second round pick for Derrick Rose, I would say forget it. Keep him until this summer and go into next year with him. But with that, it's tough to say because you know you're taking that injury risk on if you're the Pistons, and if he gets hurt at the end of this year and then you've got him basically with no value going into the summer, that would be a tough thing to deal with. So if it comes out that the Pistons aren't shopping him around, by the way, which is kind of some indications I'm getting, Vince Ellis and Rod Beard, not necessarily reporting that, but I think both of them are guessing that Derrick Rose is pretty much not available at this point. That's a huge mistake. That's going to contribute to a failing grade for this Pistons front office. If you're not trying to maximize the value for Derrick Rose and you're acknowledging that you're in a bit of a rebuilding situation and you're not looking to trade Derrick Rose to the highest bidder and making a determination if the highest bidder is high enough, at least having that conversation and conversations with other teams, you're not doing your due diligence. You're failing as a front office. By the way, any assets that you can acquire, if it's possible, for teams out there like Markieff Morris, Tim Frazier, if you can get a second-round picks for them, even in the future, even if they're protected, that's great. A little extra credit if you can do something for that. I know you're laughing about Tim Frazier getting you something on the trade market. We know that Tim Frazier is Tim Frazier. But think about it. Jameer Nelson got the Chicago Bulls second-round pick from the Pistons in the Stan Van Gundy era. Find that Mark. Find that Stan Van Gundy out there that's a sucker and try to get something for him. Talking about the Andre Drummond situation, obviously the biggest thing for the Pistons here in the next few weeks. I was listening to the Detroit Bad Boys podcast with Laz and Ben. They do a weekly show that comes out on Mondays. Check that out. Some good Andre Drummond talk. But Laz laid out the Tobias Harris and Jimmy Butler situations from last year and the hauls that both of those guys got on expiring deals. Tobias at the deadline, Jimmy Butler earlier on in the season. So maybe at the deadline for apples and oranges a little bit in terms of the Jimmy Butler and Andre Drummond situations, because you would got Jimmy Butler for more time than you would for Andre Drummond coming up here in these next few weeks. But those guys got bigger packages and were players that you needed to throw big money at this offseason to retain. Philly did that with Tobias, and obviously the Miami Heat did that instead with Jimmy Butler. But we have as a baseline and as kind of a barely acceptable package at this point, in my mind anyway, Chandler Parsons as an expiring contract and the Brooklyn pick through from Miami through Brooklyn. That is a top 14 lottery protected pick this year and the year after and the year after that. So it continues to be lottery protected for three straight years. And with Kevin Durant coming off an injury next year, there is a world where Brooklyn doesn't make the playoffs this year, has a tailspin in the second half of the season, and misses the playoffs, and keeps that pick this season, whether it stays with Atlanta, goes to Detroit, or goes to someone else in a trade. However, I don't really see a scenario where Kevin Durant joins the Brooklyn Nets next year, and they miss the playoffs over the next two seasons after that. So certainly that would be conveyed as a late first-round pick sometime in the next 3 years. It's a decent asset. But if we're being honest, with the state of this draft right now, you might prefer that Brooklyn has a tailspin and that becomes a pick that conveys the following year instead of this year. But anyway, that package of the Brooklyn pick and Chandler Parsons, that's a C-. That's a bare minimum. That's something that you wouldn't be too excited about as a Pistons fan. That C-minus grade goes up a little bit if you can get Alex Len and Evan Turner as expirings instead of Chandler Parsons. A little bit. Probably maybe even a C from that. It goes up a little bit more if it's Alex Len and Alan Crabb, a possible useful guy, or maybe even a guy that you could spin off. Both of those guys, really, with Len and Crabb, or guys that could be useful for the Pistons the rest of the season, or maybe even beyond. So it goes up a little bit if it's Crabb instead of Turner. Still then, the grade goes up even a little bit more if you can add a second-round pick or future second-round picks to that mold. We talked about how Atlanta has all sorts of those in the coming seasons. And the grade goes up even more if you can add to that Brooklyn pick and expirings the OKC pick from 2022 that's protected. You're kind of gambling on if OKC is going to be good or not in that 21-22 season. Would convey to 2 second-round picks if they do keep that pick and don't make the playoffs that year. And the grade goes up even more if you can get some young talent from Atlanta. Talking about the maybe a realistic shot of getting a Bruno Fernando in the first round, or that the first round pick that they had, rookie this year. Of course, if they get Andre Drummond, he becomes a little bit more expendable for them in their future. And of course, guys like Cam Reddish, who I know nobody's really high on, but if you can get a Reddish, a DeAndre Hunter, a Kevin Herter, the grade goes up substantially more. Talking about John Collins, if there's a way that you can get him in the deal, obviously that balances it out more so that the Pistons would have to throw something in themselves. If there's some way that you could add assets and get John Collins, if they feel like he's a little bit duplicitous with Andre Drummond, maybe that's a possibility. And if they're low on him after he got the suspension for the PEDs this year, and maybe part of Trey Young's angst is difficulty meshing with John Collins or not feeling him for some reason, maybe he's more available than we think. So it might be a nice idea to add some assets to our side of the ledger to possibly balance it out with John Collins on the other side. Now, the biggest egregious mistake this team could make from now on is if they don't trade Andre Drummond from now to the deadline. That would be an F. At this point, it seems like they've kind of put themselves out there and played their hand pretty poorly, unless they already know that the deal's in place, in which case I guess it doesn't really matter. But if you're leaking things to the media, if you're pissing off Andre Drummond that bad and then get nothing for him and he sulks the rest of the season and leaves Detroit this summer, that's the worst case scenario. But the fact that they're leaking it out there, the fact that they're trying to drive up the price in the public with guys like Vinny Goodwill leaking the information for them and coming out and saying, you know, people believe that they will be trading Andre Drummond before February 6th in the Adrian Wojnarowski article, leads you to believe that they already have an ironclad deal in place, a backup plan, so to speak, and that's probably that original value that's being reported out there of expirings in the Brooklyn pick, which to me, again, a C-, nothing to get too excited about. But hopefully they're checking around and making sure they can't get more and doing the due diligence around town. And, of course, anything that's creative that I haven't thought about or that we haven't talked about on this show that's a good one gets you high marks. We love the creativity. We love savvy front offices. Ed Stefanski has shown in the past couple of years that he is that at times. I think that's a good thing for Pistons fans to be excited about and to think about. He's got some clout around the league. He's not the Elton Brand type that's going to blow trades and give up a bunch of assets in return for not so great of returns. I believe that Ed Stefanski is right on the mediocre track of GMs out there in the NBA. Not one of the better ones, not one of the worst ones, and we'll see what he's able to do here in these next few months. So that's it. The Monday morning quarterbacking cannot be done now. We've laid out our parameters. They're on tape. You can play them back for me after February 6th if I'm ripping them unjustly or praising them when they don't deserve that praise. So this is your boy Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, saying thanks for listening. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow talking Cleveland Cavaliers recap and looking ahead to another game against the Cavs. That's coming up on Wednesday. Thanks for listening. Talk to you guys tomorrow.